Hey, just a heads up, this episode might contain some sensitive subjects, namely loss of life. So if anybody that's listening is sensitive to some of those things, it's just a bit of a trigger warning, content warning for you. As always, sensitive topics on this show. So exercise caution. If you need to speak with somebody and listen to your body. Listen to your mind, listen to what they're telling you. If you need to stop, stop. But let's just get into it. Most days during this whole COVID-19 pandemic lockdown, I went for a walk. It's kind of something that I've been starting to do in the evenings, being cooped up inside for however long during the day. Getting up and going to the gym in the mornings just doesn't do enough for me to be active. So I've begun to go for walks in the evenings. Sometimes I bring people along with me, family members, friends, partner. And I just kind of do a bit of a quick half hour to an hour rip around the neighborhood. And often on these walks, I consider what topics I'm going to bring up for the latest episode of Let's Talk About. And I was walking recently, and I saw a sight that I wasn't quite used to. I was walking down the street, and granted, I live in a, just for transparency, I don't live in like an incredibly affluent part of the city, but I do live in a pretty comfortable neighborhood, pretty safe neighborhood. People middle class, upper middle class neighborhood. And I was walking down the street, down this nice kind of riverside street, and a police car rolled by. And living in this neighborhood, people will see a police car once a week at most. There are a couple police officers that live in the neighborhood, and they stop by the house, stop by home, whatever, during their patrol. I see one buzz by when you're out driving around doing some errands. So I really didn't pay much attention to it. It was kind of this one road. Usually I see police officers drive down there, sometimes when I'm on my walks. So I kept going, kept walking, like I usually do. Thought nothing of it, and that whole idea of not thinking anything of seeing a police officer and just walking down normally is a bit of privilege on my part. I will express that, but I continued walking, went, got a coffee at Tim Hortons, and swung around back walking towards my house. And I saw the same police car driving again. And that's when it hit me. I'm not used to being around police officers in my neighborhood. It's a pretty safe neighborhood, so we don't really need police officers generally patrolling the area. We've had incidents here and there, people getting stabbed, people getting in fights, people getting jumped. That was always kind of a pressing issue when we were in high school, hearing about people, so-and-so getting jumped on a walk during the weekend at night. A few friends had been chased by people in the neighborhood when we were younger. You know, things happen. But we never thought the need for police officers in our neighborhood. And nothing's really changed. Still a safe neighborhood. Still, you know, a lot of new Canadians coming in and starting their life in this country here. And it's just a beautiful, multicultural, middle-class neighborhood. Been fortunate to grow up here all of my life. And the episode topic didn't really hit me until actually yesterday. I was sitting with a friend of mine. A couple of my friends bought a house, and we were checking out their new flooring. And we were just sitting there, and the topic of defund the police came up. And that's the topic of today's episode, defund the police movement, what it should mean, what it can mean, what it can do, and where I see the possibilities going. I'm not going to offer my perspective on it. I think anybody that listens to this show consistently knows where I kind of sit on whether you think of the political spectrum or on particular issues. I think I have some conservative views, some liberal views, some kind of out there views on things, but generally you can, if you know me, you'll know where I kind of sit on a lot of topics. This is going to be kind of hopefully a more objective episode, but we were sitting, a friend and I talking, and he had no idea really what the defund the police movement was. He just saw the name, and I 100% believe the defund the police movement is horribly misnamed. It is an extreme reaction, and the name implies an extreme reaction. I know there are people within the movement, people that do totally believe that we do not need police, that we should get rid of all police, and I don't know what their idea of an alternative is. A lot of people, a lot of kind of anarchists, as well as some more socialist folk, would say that we need to self-govern and self-police and things like that. So I sat down and we had a conversation about it, and I kind of explained the different parts of the defund the police movement to this friend. And this friend is pretty conservative on a lot of issues. He grew up in a pretty well-to-do family and, you know, lived in a nice house and didn't really have to deal with a lot of trouble growing up. Just trouble that we made for ourselves. But, you know, he didn't know what the movement meant. So looking at the name, and the name itself implies, as I mentioned, a very extreme reaction. So he thought that that's what it was. And I had to explain that, well, there are people there that believe that defunding the police 100% and getting rid of police is not the answer. That it's just, it's a little something else. So that's what I want to talk about today. So what is defund the police? Well, arising a lot of this, you know, there have been a defund the police, all ACAB movement people for a very long time. Generally people that have had bad experiences with police officers, people from marginalized groups, people from oppressed groups that really have legitimate complaints towards police and the justice system, and what they have to deal with every single day is different than what I had to deal with, what other cis white people have to deal with every single day. You know, middle class, upper class people don't have to deal with the things that these people have to deal with, so they have very legitimate concerns that they are being treated differently. So what this movement is essentially arguing, there are the individuals I'm going to talk kind of about structural problems in policing, what those people believe, and what the literature kind of said, what the literature does say, not kind of, it does say, and what the defund the police movement in a lot of ways is about. So I can't really get too much in too deep into the culture of policing, but the ACAB people essentially say that all cops are bad. Blanket statement. If you are part of the policing apparatus, if you are a member of a police force, you might be a good person. You might be that good cop that does nice things, plays it by the book, and, you know, there are black cops, there are gay cops, there are female cops, and there are cops from poor backgrounds, and they do amazing jobs, and they are understood and have good relationships with their community. But by supporting a broken system, as they say, you yourself are complicit. And it's the same thing that I've talked about before with, you know, using racist team names or standing by idly and saying nothing while people you know in sports or in the workplace are being harassed. You are complicit through your silence. And this is what people say. You know, the policing culture incentivizes a certain person, draws a certain person, draws a certain reaction, and, you know, I think there have been, you know, Vox and John Oliver, and there have been great documentaries. 13th is a great documentary. I will go to my grave saying that Rise of the Warrior Cop by Radley Balko is a must-read for everybody at this point, where we are at, to understand the militarization of the police and how, you know, the old adage, when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Well, when you have a military-grade firearm, every single person looks like a threat. There was a good tweet I saw recently that said something to the effect of, why are we expecting people, things to change when, you know, you're armed like you're about to kick down a door in Afghanistan? And that's very much true. The use of military training and military weaponry. You look at the, here in Winnipeg, the armored personnel carrier that we have, people are calling a tank, and police aren't calling it a tank, but it's an APC, technically, if you want to use a technical term. Armored personnel carrier, it's supposed to carry troops into battle and protect troops on patrol. So that in and of itself, so the ACAB people say all cops are bad. You might be a good person, your brother, sister, uncle, mother, father might be a cop and might be a great person. They might, you know, work intelligence for the RCMP or, you know, be an administrator, but they are a part of a broken system, so they are complicit. Now, what this means is that there's a structural problem, and I've always said structural problems require structural solutions. You know, it requires a complete shift in terms of policing. You need to basically tear down the apparatus and build it up again in a different way. Get rid of the people that perpetuate this, you know, these bad behaviors, this kind of militarized activity. Another book that I think everybody should read is Racialized Policing by Elizabeth Comack, a prof at the University of Manitoba, a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant woman, one of the smartest people I've ever met. It's about not racial profiling, but the idea of racialized policing, where there's large amounts of resources poured into racialized areas that create this kind of us versus them, by putting all these, by marking off areas, impoverished areas of the city as problem or as dangerous. You are kind of creating the self-fulfilling prophecy. You are putting these people under so much scrutiny that things are going to be found and bad relationships are going to be made because people are going to have bad experiences with police officers because they're in an area that's very racialized. And, you know, something comes over the radio and it's, well, an indigenous male heading this way. Well, every single person living in that area, that direction, is likely an indigenous person. So people are going to get stopped for no reason, and that's going to cause problems. And it's going to deteriorate the relationship between police and the public, and it's a whole thing. So I would incentivize also reading Racialized Policing by Elizabeth Comack, supporting a Winnipeg, a University of Manitoba academic, very important. So that's kind of part of what the Defund the Police movement is about. It's about taking these problem police precincts and tearing them down and starting them back up again. Taking, you know, getting rid of the bad apples, keeping the good, changing policy. You know, that's what's going to happen. That's what is happening in Minnesota. There are police precincts that are turning over, that are getting rid of officers and bringing in new ones and completely changing the power structure of the police precincts and the policing system there. You know, with the police's union here in Winnipeg, you know, 30% of the city's budget goes to the Winnipeg Police Service. And that's grown steadily year over year. People have a problem with that. Why? Because you're removing money from other areas. Now, the other part of the Defund the Police movement has to do with this. It's not about completely defunding the police. There are people out there that do want to completely defund the police, and they don't want their tax dollars. They don't want to be supporting this broken system. They don't want police or whatever. There are individuals out there that want money reallocated. And I think the grand majority of people that are part of the Defund the Police movement want this. They don't want to completely get rid of police because police serve a function in society that is ultimately positive. Who's going to stop a drunk driver? Who is going to stop drug deals from going down? Who's going to stop a guy on a murder spree? Who's going to, you know, this, that, and the other thing? Who's going to catch people that are like robbers? Who is going to, you know, enforce the law and keep people safe? The problem being that we have overloaded police officers. We have put too much pressure on them. We have asked them to solve problems that they have no business trying to solve and that they are ill-equipped to solve. Academics and historians and journalists and just people in the general public have been talking for years that the war on drugs is an utter failure. You cannot police human will. You cannot police addictions because it is a health issue. It's a mental health issue. It's a physical health issue. It's an addictions issue. It is not a law and order issue. We have had in Winnipeg the recent video of an officer kicking a man on the ground. It came out that, you know, it took three officers to take the man down. He was subdued. He was kicked, and he was taken away. It came out later that the man was on meth, and we've had multiple incidences in Winnipeg of people on meth, you know, causing trouble, and it's the police that go out and take care of them, or they take them to the hospital, and it's poor nurses and orderlies that have to take care of them. You're putting, you know, that's why people are being shot, because officers are going in there. Tasers don't work on people on meth. They are much stronger than officers are. A single officer, it takes multiple officers to subdue one person. Tasers don't work. Pepper spray doesn't work. Nothing works except for a bullet, unfortunately. So people are being put, your officers are being put in this dangerous situation, and people that, for no fault of their own, have become addicted to drugs, and instead of getting the help that they need, they're having the police called on them. The police are being, like, it's a catch-22 situation, or it's a difficult situation on both sides, because the person that is on drugs needs help. They do not need to be arrested and thrown in jail, or worse. They need help. They need addictions treatment. They need a place to sleep. They need to be put into care. They don't need to be arrested. And the police really probably don't want to be chasing down meth heads every day. It's not their job to solve the meth crisis in this city, but for some reason, it has been their responsibility. The responsibilities of social workers, addictions treatment, you know, social services, employment, you know, the main cause of crime is poverty. The main cause of addictions is poverty. People are committing crimes because they have no other option. They need to survive somehow. They need to keep a roof over their heads. They need to keep their bellies full, clothes on their back, and they have no other options. They're having mental health crises. They're addicted. They can't find a job, especially right now with a pandemic going on. And all of these problems, impoverishment, oppression, social issues, are resulting in increased crime. And we are basically asking police to solve these issues by arresting people and throwing them in jail, which doesn't do anything. It just perpetuates the system and it creates a more difficult life for these people. So what the Defund the Police movement on the whole is trying to do is to reallocate that fund. Like, think of the 30% of the budget. I'm going to bring up the 2020 Winnipeg budget here. Winnipeg budget. Okay, so the city has an operational spending budget of $1.145 billion. So $1.15, let's say, billion dollars. That is the operating budget. Basically, every, you know, road repairs, $130 million. Transit, $206 million. The UPass got eliminated, oops. But the police budget, $304 million. Fire paramedics, $209 million, that's good. Rec facilities are closing. Libraries are closing. Community groups. So, grants to community groups dropped $8 million. There are fire paramedic stations closing. Property tax is going up. The road repair budget went up, but the capital budget went down. You know, our budget has gone up $20 million this year, yet spending in a lot of areas is going down. Think of that $304 million, a third of our budget, what that could be spent on. You can increase addiction treatment. You know, the Oak Addiction Center is supposed to be opening up, and that's going to do wonders for the addictions community. There was a great story that I saw. You know, what if there is a middle-aged gentleman that's having a mental health crisis. He's walking in traffic and he's about to be, he's might get hit. People are scared. And suddenly a van pulls up, says, you know, let's use a Winnipeg example, Main Street Project on the side. Two workers come out and they start talking to the man. They know this man. They've talked to this man before. They're able to, they know that he's on drugs. They know that they know he's mental health problems, and they're able to talk to him, talk him down, because they know they have a relationship with this man. They know how to talk to this man. They know the issues that he's going through. They're able to sit him down, get him in the van, and take him away to a treatment facility where he can, you know, have, you know, wait out this episode. Right now, police officers are called. Somebody has a mental health crisis, a police officer is called. There's a person that's on drugs wandering down the street. Police officers are called. A sketchy person in a neighborhood. Police officers are called. If we have a robust system that, you know, imagine if every mental, you know, homeless person was able to be taken care of by Main Street Project and Siloam Mission. They could go out. And they had the space and they had the funds to take care of these people, get them off the street for the night, get them at home. If there were, you know, dedicated mental health workers on call that we can, you know, instead of calling 911, you call a different number and, you know, a paramedic shows up or an ambulance shows up and there are mental health workers there that can take care of somebody. There are addictions treatment workers that can come somewhere. Imagine just on an incident basis what that can do. You're freeing up police resources so they can respond to violent crimes, so they can respond to actual incidences you know, they don't have to babysit people that are on drugs. They don't have to, you know, there was a story that I was told of the police with their APC. Basically, there were multiple officers standing there while there was a guy high on meth throwing bricks from a roof. And they just had to sit there and wait for him to come down. Imagine what those officers could have been doing if they didn't have to be there. They could have been taking care of something completely different. There are violent crimes in the city. Imagine if we could free up police resources to take care of those issues and they wouldn't have to keep looking after these other things. You know, the Defund the Police movement does not want to fully get rid of cops, as much as the name implies. It's reallocating funds to stop crime from ever happening in the first place. Police are a response. They are a reactionary force, just like a paramedic. A fire, you know, you don't have the fire department running around spraying random houses to make sure there isn't a fire. You don't have paramedics walking down the street checking people's hearts to make sure they're not having a heart attack. They're waiting. They respond. They respond. They are first responders. So what the Defund the Police movement, a lot of the people in it want, is to reallocate funds from police, take the burden off of them, allow them to focus on solving actual crimes, and, you know, fund more homeless shelters, get people off the streets, help improve mental health facilities, you know, addictions facilities, job training, get more money to get people working, get them employed. Imagine if people were able to just find a job, they would be able to be lifted out of poverty. They're trying to take this money and do something proactive with it. Get, you know, the amazing thing, you give a person a job, they start paying taxes, and that money comes right back. If you arrest a person, throw them in jail, the money that you spent on the resources to arrest that person and keep them in jail for however long they need to, that money's lost. You spend money to get a person off the street, get them an apartment, get them into a job. Eventually, that money comes back. They start paying back into the economy. They start paying their taxes. They take over the apartment themselves. They buy a car. They buy food. They buy clothes. They buy internet. They start paying property taxes and income taxes, and the money comes back. That money's not lost. This $304 million, a large amount of it's going to be lost because that's just operating costs for the police. If we are able to, as the Defund the Police movement wants to, reallocate those funds to different social services, job training, mental health, addictions, everything, the whole kit and caboodle, we are able to reduce the amount of crime proactively. We're being proactive about it. We're being preventative, not reactive. Because as they are called, they are first responders. Police aren't there. They should not be there. They are not trained to help people with addictions. They are not trained to help people with mental health. They are there to solve crimes. They are there to stop crimes from happening. You know, I'm missing tons of details in this discussion, but it's a very big discussion, and I've only got half an hour. And I only know so much about this stuff, but please give this some thought. And please somebody rename this movement, because Defund the Police is just a very wrecked. I know there are people that actually want to get rid of the police. I get it. I know a few of them. But please understand that people's hearts are in the right place. People want police. People like police. I like police. Granted, I'm a cis white man, but I like police. I think they serve a purpose. But we are asking too much of them. I want them catching drunk drivers. I want them solving murders. I want them finding the missing and murdered Indigenous women. Stopping those crimes. I don't want them chasing meth heads all night. That's not their job. And that's going to do it here. This is a really quick rambly episode. This has been Let's Talk About. Thank you very much for listening live on UMFM, or if you're on Spotify, thank you very much for your download, and have a wonderful, wonderful week.